This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
5 o'clock hour here on 104.1 KMOX. That's the Redbird Rush Hour leading into Sports Open Line. Coming out of the baseball game earlier, Matt Pauly and Kevin Wheeler with you here. And obviously you can watch on the KMOX Sports Twitter handle, on the YouTube page, on our Facebook page. It's all out there for you if you want to watch us and throw in your comments that way. You can text if you'd like. Throw out the number, Matt.
314-436-7900.
Oh, so the same one as it always is.
Yes.
Same. So you can always text into the show.
You caught me off guard there because you've said that number probably more often than
I have in your life. Oh, my God, a bazillion times. Yeah. A bazillion times. But feel free to join us via the text line or in the comments section on the video stream, which you can access on all of the major social media outlets. We're going to kick it around here until we get to the end of this hour, and then, of course, Sports Open Line after the 6 o'clock hour. Let's start just simple, Matt. First week is basically up. The first six games, your first homestand is up. You go 4-2. There was a lot of good, and there were a couple of problems. So let's start with the good. And then we'll kind of build from there. And we'll include some of the highlights from today, like Ivan Herrera being the star of the game and the decision to leave Sonny Gray in there with the bases. A lot to get to from today, but I want to go like overarching six games, homestand's over, 4-2 is a fine outcome.
Yes, and the two losses were both in extra innings.
Right, and in all honesty, if you'd done a couple of things a little better, you might have won at least one of those.
If not both.
And, you know, like yesterday, for example, you got bases loaded, one out, with a chance to with the winning run on third, and you don't get him in. That was Jordan Walker. And it's hard to be tough on Jordan Walker because he's off to a good start. So, I can't really be like, you got to figure it out. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard pretty much every time up, hit a home run in that same game. So, can't really be too hard on him. But some missed opportunities.
Yeah, the point, you can identify moments in each of those two losses where if it would have gone in the other direction, you probably would have won the game.
Just as simple, maybe even as, you know, one reliever being a little better.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Fernandez is struggling the last couple times out. It's going to happen over the course of 162. What we don't know yet is what it means big picture. Let's just go over the I think, the best things that we've seen so far. Sorry, but I'm going to do the disclaimer. It doesn't mean we believe or are suggesting that all of these things will last, because we don't know. But through the first six games, the offense is a story.
It is.
I mean, you're getting more than 10 hits per game. It's the Cardinals are the first major league team in a decade to get 10 or more hits in each of their first six games. So they're hitting the ball. They're hitting the ball out of the ballpark. Nootbaar's got a couple of homers. Herrera went deep three times today. Arenado went deep. I think the offense is the story.
They have a team batting average just under 300. They have a team OPS just under 900. They've put up these huge offensive numbers without Wilson Contreras and Mason Wynn doing much of anything until they both contributed.
That's a great point.
In the game today. This has been, and also, just everybody poke this in the back of your head and then bring it back up. This goes to show you that what happens during spring doesn't necessarily mean anything going into the regular season, because the Cardinals look terrible in spring training offensively.
No, that's a good point.
They have been just fine from Jump Street.
And the perfect example of that on the opposite side is Wilson Contreras.
Yeah.
He crushed for 6 weeks and now he's not hitting. That's the nature of offense. It does come and go. And you just need to be, as a team, a bit more consistent and a bit more productive. Now, one of the guys that I think is going to help make that happen is Ivan Herrera. And not just because of three home runs today, although that's part of why he's the discussion today. I mean, he hit three tanks, including a grand slam, and two of them were moonshots. I mean, we're talking hitting the Big Mac sign on a fly, and I mean, that ball got out in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, quick.
And the other one was well up into Big Mac land. I mean, this is a guy that's got legitimate offensive ability. The defense is a question. It's a major question. On opening day, was talking about the catchers with John Mozeliak leading into the game, and I was like, I'm describing Herrera. You got a really good hitting catcher who's a work in progress on defense. And his kind of jokingly said, you're being generous today. Like, they know his throwing is a problem. I don't think his blocking and receiving is that big of a problem.
I don't either.
But the throwing's a problem. But when you're hitting like this, who cares?
Yeah. So he had a historic game today for the Cardinals. Three plus home runs in a game. A Cardinals catcher has never done that. Total bases, 12 of them. A Cardinals catcher has never done that. No one's even done 11.
Yeah.
Wilson Contreras, Mike Gonzalez, Yadier Molina, and Ted Simmons were tied in first place with 10. Youngest St. Louis catcher to have a multi-home run game since Ted Simmons had one at age 24. Like, the Cardinals sent us all these notes. And
right.
You know, the names that you see on there, whether it's a Dale Murphy or a Paul Goldschmidt or a Wilson Contreras or a Gary Carter, like, those are some of the names that he's either surpassing or is right there with in some of the things he did today from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah.
He can be a difference-making middle-of-the-order bat. And, Kevin, bluntly, that's why we spent so much time.
It is.
Talking in the offseason about how important it was that the Cardinals make him essentially the everyday catcher.
Yeah.
And
he needs the at bats.
Does it look terrible when he throws a ball, you know, way like where Mason Wynn is catching it in shallow right center field? Yeah, it looks terrible. When he forgets what the count is and you lose a base runner because of it, is that a really bad mental mistake in that moment? Yeah, it is. Like, I'm not letting him off the hook for those things. But I also kind of am, because you know what? If he keeps hitting the way he's hitting right now, his defense actually doesn't have to get any better, and he's still going to help the team win a lot more games than they lose.
As long as he's not getting crossed up with pitchers and giving them a hard time, and as long as he's framing pitches the way that he's expected to and blocking the balls in the dirt, you're going to get by. Because the offense will outweigh, over time, the offense will outweigh the loss on the base paths.
Yes.
I'll tell you this. I don't think he's going to be your catcher in 3 years.
I don't either.
In 3 years, he's going to be playing first base or DHing because Contreras' contract will be up.
Yeah.
You know, they will have the flexibility to put him there. And whether it's Pajes or Crooks or Bernal, those guys are all better defensive catchers. They will have this solution at some point. But for this year, they got to score more runs. And that's a really, really big deal.
I love Pajes as the backup catcher. Like, I think he is the perfect backup catcher in Major League Baseball. His bat's respectable, really good defensive guy, great in the clubhouse. Like, he checks every single box. But if you're lucky enough, as the Cardinals have been for the last 2 years with Contreras last year and Herrera this year, if you're lucky enough to have a plus offensive player who can hit the way those two guys can hit, and we'll see, you know, Jimmy Crooks might be on, maybe not from a power standpoint, that same trajectory, but he's certainly on the trajectory of being a plus offensive bat as well.
Could be. And look, this is not fluky, right? I mean, Ivan Herrera has 176 games at AAA, so a bit more than a full season. But an .867 OPS, 110 runs batted in, 21 home runs, I mean, that's not fluky. And he hit last year when he was up here, too. And that was in, what, 258 plate appearances? So, you know, he's legitimately a bat, and the throwing's got to get fixed. And I know they're working on it, and he, you know, that's something that Ollie Marmol talked about on the Gas House Gang yesterday with Tom and Ranj and Bernie. And they're talking about it. They're going to get him throwing from his knees to see if that helps. It could, but it's not a catch-all, right? So there's a sacrifice. When you throw from your knees, you typically lose accuracy and velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Velocity is his problem, but the answer to that is usually trying to get the ball out of your hand faster to increase or to shorten your exchange time. So if you can knock a tenth off your exchange time, it's okay to lose a couple miles an hour. So if that's going to be the case, the loss of velocity is not that big of a deal, but the accuracy is going to be. It's worth trying, but it's not necessarily a great fix.
The velocity is also a little bit better this year than it was last year. So if nothing else, you go back to kind of where he was at previously with less mistakes.
All right, so that's the Ivan Herrera, the story of the day, and I think a big guy to have as a part of this lineup, and I think somebody we're going to be talking about a lot, not just this year, but in the coming years. with that legit bat. We have a lot of other things to get to. We're going to talk about Sonny Gray coming up in a few minutes. We're going to talk about this first week for Jordan Walker, how important that is, Victor Scott. A lot to get to after six games. We'll keep it going with the Redbird Rush Hour here on 104.1 KMOX. All right, Redbird Rush Hour, Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler with you here. We got a couple comments we're going to get to a little later, so hang tight because a couple people brought up the attendance at the games this week, and it's a topic, and we got a couple different things we want to hit on that coming up a little bit later on in the show. We're going to talk about Jordan Walker. I just want to talk about the one downside today. It's not a big deal, but it's something that I think is a broader theme that we've talked about before, and we talked about a lot on the Gas House Gang over the course of the offseason, is that, one, I'm an Ollie fan. I like the guy. I want him to do well. He has some. He's had some weaknesses. One of them was, you know, building a lineup. Well, he seems to have kind of gone in the right direction on that. So good. Tip of the cap. I'm glad. He's managed the bullpen very well over the last couple of years. Much credit for that. But I still think he defers too much to veterans. And I know the bullpen was thin today, but the decision to leave Sonny Gray in there with the bases loaded and nobody out in a two-run game was a mistake. And you can't, I don't know what the case was, and I didn't hear what he said about it afterwards or what Sonny said. But if that was a case of the player talking his way to stay in the game, you can't let that happen there. Your better matchup there is Maton.
Right.
Your better matchup is the guy that's not, I mean, like, keep in mind, Sonny was at 86 pitches before the home run. Yeah, that was pitch number 87. He only topped 90 pitches in half of his starts last year. So he was already above where you would normally, like, this was a normal full start for him last year. Was like upper 80s in pitches. And we're talking a week and a half ago, we were talking about how he's still behind. So I get it. I know the bullpen was taxed. But in a two-run game there with the bases loaded and nobody out, I don't think the right move is the guy that's been behind schedule down on Velo, although Velo was better today.
It was.
And obviously tiring a little bit because there were two hard-hit balls earlier in that inning too.
So a few things on this. First off, if I'm making that call, I'm pulling him in that moment. I'm bringing Maton in.
Yeah.
Maton was supposed to be your closer today. If they've got Maton warming in the seventh inning,
it's the big spot.
That means they've identified that as a big moment.
Amen.
And you ended up bringing him anyways in what turned into kind of a meaningless inning because the runs had already scored. So you kind of wasted Maton in that spot. If you're not going to use him in the ninth, well, then use him in a big moment, and you lost that opportunity when the grand slam was hit. So that's the first thing. I do think what was going on with the bullpen and the bullpen helping to dictate decisions was a thing today, and you were going to try to get as much out of your starter. I think it's a...
Totally get it.
As much as I would have made that move, I don't think Ollie not making that move is for non-legitimate reasons. I think it's a very legitimate thing to look at the bullpen situation and try to push your starter as far as you can.
Not after two hard-hit balls and a hit-by-pitch, though.
He's
got to come out there.
The 0-2 hit-by-pitches, two 0-2 hit-by-pitches today.
In the game.
Has Gray ever done that in his career?
Probably not.
Two 0-2 hit-by-pitches.
But it's a sign of fatigue when you're missing that big.
Sure. So that's part of it. I think one of the big things that you mentioned is that... the deferring to, like, make your decision before you go
out
there.
Maybe
he did. The other thing that's not being talked about, and Mike Claiborne and I talked about this a little bit at the end of the game, should have they made a roster move coming into
good
today?
Question. Let's talk about that next.
Okay.
Let's get into that because that's a good point. We need to continue talking about the bullpen because the bullpen's been worked a lot the last couple of days, and there are a couple guys struggling. I think it's a good point. Maybe there should have been a roster move coming into today. We'll get into that. We're going to talk about Jordan Walker. We'll talk about attendance, all that coming up. It's the Redbird Rush Hour on 104.1 KMOX.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Short segment here, Matt, but let's finish up that conversation about the bullpen. We're going to get to a few of the messages that are on our streaming side. So we got a couple from Facebook, one or two from YouTube. We'll throw those in. You're always welcome to throw in your opinions, your questions, whatever you want. And we'll be happy to mix those in as we go. We are going to talk about the attendance in just a little bit. So if you're looking forward to, if you've been wondering about it, you want to ask about it, we got a couple questions on that we're going to get to before the end of the show. Also want to talk about Jordan Walker a little bit as well. But let's talk about that bullpen issue that we were just kicking around.
Yeah.
Because you had two long games, and you knew you were going to be limited today, and you know that Sonny is not really, even last year when healthy, was not the 100-pitch guy.
Yeah, that's not who he is.
No, he was the 90-pitch guy, right. And whatever, however many innings or outs he can get out of that is what you're going to get out of it. And today he was great until the last couple batters. Really, it was only two things. You had like the hit-by-pitch and the grand slam. Mm-hmm. Everything else was kind of normal pitching, and he looked great. Got strikeouts, did it all. Do you think maybe there should have been a bolstering of the bullpen, somebody going out, somebody coming in?
Yeah, I think that would have been a standard move to be made. And I looked at Chris Roycroft, who I really, really like. I'm an unabashed supporter of Chris Roycroft, but he had pitched in two straight games, I think.
So it would have been down today.
Yeah, having a fresh arm come in might have been worth not having Roycroft available for the next 10 days. I don't know. Like, maybe that's not a completely fair thing to say.
Right. And certainly not great for the player.
Right. It's a bummer for them from a personal standpoint. But, you know, there's so much talk about Gordon Graceffo being basically ready in the next guy. And he hadn't pitched at Memphis since Sunday. So that's a guy who could have come up. Now, somebody like Riley O'Brien pitched the night before for Memphis. So
right,
he's
so you're
probably
not call him
a candidate. There were a bunch of guys who did pitch the night before that might have been a candidate to come up. But yeah, I think I was a little bit surprised when I walked into the ballpark today and there was not a roster move.
Good thing is they won the game.
Yep.
You got three home runs from your catcher, which helped a lot with that. And you continued on with the good homestand, and obviously off to Boston for a tough series starting on Friday. All right, we got Jordan Walker talk, attendance talk coming your way. It's the Redbird Rush Hour on 104.1 KMOX. KMOX, of course, also on our YouTube channel, KMOX Sports YouTube channel, Facebook page, Twitter account. You can stream us. We'd love you guys streaming. Hello, waving at you. And we'll get to some of your questions coming up in a second here, and we got a couple on the attendance, and I think that's an interesting topic. And we'll get into that in the next segment. Let's talk a bit about Jordan Walker.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look, this whole season has been set up as, like, the time for runway, right? And that's been true for, I mean, look, Mason Wynn doesn't need runway. He's your shortstop. We know that. There's no alternative. He was the starter last year. He was a Gold Glove finalist. Regardless of how he hits, he's your shortstop. That's not he's not really in that conversation. But Victor Scott is in that conversation. He's off to a good start. He's already got four stolen bases in a week. You know, had a hit today, 1-for-3 with a walk, the creative bunt for a hit that really helped break things open. You had Ivan Herrera is one of those runway guys going 3-for-4 today, hitting three home runs and driving in six. And then, of course, the other one of those guys is Jordan Walker, who's off to a good start this year. I mean, it's not perfect. He's missed on a couple of opportunities, but you're not going to be perfect. He's hitting, you know what, like almost 400, mm-hmm. which again, stat doesn't matter, but he's hitting the ball hard on a regular basis. His single today was 116 miles an hour off the bat. So I think that's really encouraging to me that Walker is, he looks calm. He doesn't look like he's looking over his shoulder. There were times last year where he looked desperate, where he's like almost trying to stay in the big leagues. And he seems to be, maybe it's just the group of them and they know, they all know this and they've all come up together. So they all know each other. Maybe it's just a comfort thing that we're seeing.
Maybe it looks good though. He, you know, tiny sample size, 5 games, but he's hitting .389. His OPS is above 1,000. I am more encouraged, and I know we've seen this from him before, but it's the fact that he's just hitting the ball so hard, and he's making pretty good contact. He only has 3 strikeouts in 18 at-bats so far.
Yeah.
That's a big... So for him to be hitting the ball hard, has had a number of exit velos in you know, well into the hundreds, and for him not to be striking out, hitting for average, it's really good to see. His only extra base hit still is the one home run that he's hit, but I'm not worried about that. I think it's been a really good start to the year for Jordan Walker, and you start to see glimpses of who you thought he was going to be and even who he was for the second half of the season 2 years ago.
You know, the more I think about it, like he's just at this moment in time doesn't have the feel for hitting a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah.
You know, they've been working on it. The adjustments that he's made, though, are mattering. He looks more athletic in the box. That's a big catchphrase amongst hitting coaches, just be athletic, right? Because you see a lot of guys, and maybe they're standing too tall and stiff, or they don't have a wide enough base, so they don't look balanced. And one thing that's definitely different with Walker, and it's been highlighted a little bit on some of the TV games on FanDuel Sports Midwest, because they show us the video, but his stride, like the distance between his 2 feet after his stride is much wider than it was before. And for a big guy, it should be. If you don't have space there to work with, you can't rotate well enough. You know, and I think that just getting some little tweaks is going to allow him to compete. And then eventually, like that ball he hit for a single today, that ball was hit 116 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But it was a flat shot, right? 8-degree launch angle, whatever it was. That pitch was belt high. That's a ball I think when he starts to get even more comfortable, he's going to hit into Big Mac land.
So right now, his average exit velocity is about 91 miles per hour. That's about the 80th percentile in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's high end.
That's pretty good. His bat speed is at about 77 miles per hour.
Which is high.
That's like 98, 99th percentile.
Let's put it this way. The only guy better than that on a regular basis is Stanton.
Yeah.
That's about Aaron Judge bat speed.
So those are, you know, those numbers that I just mentioned are somewhere between well above average and elite. And those type of numbers are going to help lead to other numbers. And you know what? The loft is going to come. Power is one of the last things that develops for young hitters, and the power goes along with the loft. At some point in time, that launch angle is going to change a little bit, and he's going to start hitting more doubles, and he's going to start hitting more home runs. But right now, let him hit the living you-know-what out of the baseball, and let him hit for average, and everything's going to be okay.
It's fascinating. You know, like the last couple of years, and again, understandable from the team's view, I think something we can legitimately disagree with, but understandable that because they were in we're trying to compete mode, they moved on from younger players faster than they probably should have. In the case of Walker, we might have seen this before if you didn't send him down after a month, right?
Yes.
And I understand why they did it. Because especially if a guy's getting lost in his own thoughts, it's hard to fix that at the major league level. I understand it. But I also wonder, in retrospect, if it wouldn't have been better to just ride it out. If you had ridden it out 2 years ago, this might have been the guy you were looking at last year, and who knows what you'd be looking at now. But the point is, they reached that phase, and this will tie into our next conversation about the attendance, which we're going to get into from a couple of comments. But that will tie into all of the things that need to go together. The team finally realized the old way wasn't doing it. The old way of patching holes with old guys and, you know, we're going to play a bench guy instead of a young star, potential star, because we want more certainty because we're trying to win. Well, you might end up being the better team just doing it this way because you're playing talent, not seniority or a more known commodity.
That's
right?
What we talked about all offseason. The most frustrating thing for me was everybody saying that this team was going to take a step back offensively. Why would they take a step back offensively? The player that is gone is Paul Goldschmidt. He didn't do much for you offensively. It was fair to think that Nolan Arenado would have some level of a bounce back. And then you got all these young players who are ready to take steps forward. It was the easiest thing in the world to see a very distinct possibility where the team takes a step forward offensively. That doesn't mean they're one of the best offensive teams, but one of the best run scoring teams in baseball. It just means they were going to be better than they were last year.
And again, a lot of that could just be having your guys out there, having Newt. But look at the impact Newt Barr has when he's healthy. You know, when he's out there, he's awfully good. All right, we're going to get to the attendance questions that we're having. And I think, again, valid points to talk about here, but it's not exactly unexpected. It's Bird Rush Hour, Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler with you here, obviously taking you up till the top of the hour, and then at the top of the hour, we've got Sports Open Line coming. I'm going to do a quick tease on that.
We'll keep the Cardinals conversation going. We've got a few guests as well, so be tuned in. For those of you watching on the video stream, you'll have to switch to a new video at 6 o'clock.
All right, so we got a few different questions about the attendance, and we're just going to kind of bring it all together. So I'm going to put them up on the screen as we go. I'm going to read all of them, too, because they're really short. But Kelly sent us a message through Facebook saying, what can we do to grow attendance? It's not looking good for the first homestand. We got a shorter one from Scott. A lot of empty seats. Hey, Kevin. Yeah. Today was announced at 20,000, but there weren't 20,000 people there. We can count.
Yeah.
You look with your eyes. It was definitely not that. And then the other one we got here was from Space. We got a message from Space that says, I do think that with the team having such an exciting games, attendance will start to pick up some after hockey season is over. I don't think that the Blues season or city are affecting the attendance. It's clearly dissatisfaction with the last few years of performance by the team. I think that if they play well and you look like a good competitive team for a month or two, the attendance will go back up. But this, to me, I feel weird about it. Like, I see these tweets every day, like, oh my God, another new low. I'm like, this is fully what we expected. The team expected it. They announced it. They said, we expect attendance to be down, and we know that the TV revenue is going down, so we're cutting payroll. They flat out said those things out loud. Maybe maybe it's still jarring. I'm not going to lie. Like, today was jarring. That looked like a Tampa Bay Rays game.
Mm-hmm.
But it was expected, and there's only one way out of it.
Winning.
And that's play well for an extended period of time.
I get the only thing that really actually kind of bothers me is there's a group of fans out there that take victory laps on this. Like any time you see a bad attendance number, it's the sell the team people, it's the fire Mo people. It's, you know, there's a group of people who are trying to take a victory lap over the attendance numbers. And that bugs me a little bit. I don't like, that's not where I would be focusing my energy, my efforts, especially for a team that has started off the season playing pretty well. But to your point, They knew this is what it was going to be. The fans started really talking by not showing up to games.
That's right.
Last season.
It started in 23, but last year was a little more stark.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they did not get to the 3 million fans last year, yeah. And they're likely not to get there this year if these current numbers do continue. So the fans have spoken. It's up to the Cardinals to go play much better baseball and bring the fans back.
And for a period of time. I mean, yeah. And I think the team knows this. I mean, they've all said it in various ways, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. And look, this is normal, right? When a customer base is unhappy, the way that they show you that they're unhappy is they don't go to your business, right? So if you run a restaurant and you go there and I have a bad meal, I'm probably not going to go back, at least for a while, unless I start seeing, oh my God, reviews, they got a new chef or they a new management and they fix things. It's a simple process, and I never begrudge fans for demanding what they expect.
But I would also add this one other kind of, this is going to sound a little honky, but that's okay. They did a lot of work in the offseason to change the game day presentation because it had gotten very, very stale. You know, there if you were there just for the baseball, well, the rest of the presentation left something to be desired. I give a lot of credit to the organization. They are doing a lot of different things this year, even stuff on the board. Not like there's no longer 9,000 first pitches before the game and things like that. So that they've done a nice job with that. They're going to have a DJ there on Friday nights. They're doing, you know, obviously the baseball is the most important thing.
Yeah.
But if you want to go and have a good time and enjoy it, I think the Cardinals have made some nice tweaks. So start playing better baseball, win games, get fans out. I think when fans are in the ballpark, they're going to have an experience that was actually better than what it was previously.
Yeah, and look. The Cardinals built the reputation for success, which is what they were able to do to sell 3 million tickets a year for 20 years, right? I mean, they did that. But they also did the thing that made people stop coming, right? Your free agent moves weren't working. You didn't develop pitchers, in particular starting pitchers. You missed out on, you know, you haven't developed a star since who?
I mean,
like hitter, like a star hitter. Who's the biggest star out of your system since Molina? I mean, it's a long ways off.
It was going to be Tavares.
Well, that was the idea. Yeah. And hopefully it'll be these guys. You know, right. Hopefully these guys and J.J. Weatherholt start to change that. And we'll look forward to seeing how it plays out. But we got a long way to go, man. Only 6 games in. So plenty of time to figure all this out. Matt, have a good show, buddy.
All right, sounds good.
Sports Open Line's coming up after the top of the hour news. We'll be back in this hour tomorrow with another Redbird Rush Hour here on 104.1 KMOX.